It's just like an ability I have that like I can look at something and I can think, like when I'm looking through portfolios, you mentioned like we had like it was actually we had just under 2,000 submissions last year. But so when I look at something like I can click on like two or three images and I know whether I feel like it meets the standard or not. So I know for like I mean, it is a lot of work, but it's also like something I really enjoy because I always love being introduced to, new art that I've not seen before. And it's not about like the work being bad. I feel like sometimes you can see something and it's germinating and it's just not quite there yet. So I also feel like when you try and make something or in terms of like you're thinking about an audience or like you're thinking about, oh, this is going to make money or this is going to be popular, this is the formula. I feel like that's never going to work. And as a person, I do not have the ability to be enthusiastic about things that I am not interested in. That is, I don't know, like if you're being kind, I guess you can interpret it as integrity, but I just feel like it's just I just it's just a lack. So like it makes no sense to me like to be like, oh, you know what, this person, like I don't like the work, I don't like what's going on, but maybe they'll be popular. Like if I don't believe in it, how am I just like for me that's such a big block. I can't sell it to anybody else, whether it's literally selling or in terms of like just even speaking about it and saying, oh, this is good when it's not good. That's never something that I've been able to do. Because I feel like whether it's, you're a producer, whether you're, you're publishing books, I think it's really vital like to have like a voice or like an idea in terms of like a remit, what are we doing, and like to be able to identify talent. I think like that's something that's really kind of missing from like the general media landscape, but then so many things are missing from the media landscape, so it feel like you can't really crab about it. It's dire out there.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, just like I really appreciate your honesty with that answer and just being really frank. Like, one thing that I really resonated with was like this idea that taste is kind of like built, right? Like, from a lot of different references. And I to be able to draw on no, not just comics to inform your taste, but also like the word, like the actual prose, and like and other media, I think is really important. I think a lot of the times in the creative industries there can be like this tunnel vision where maybe the stuff that's getting greenlit without being too disrespectful about it, I guess, the stuff that's getting greenlit is borrowing like frames, or like they're borrowing words or ways of doing things that resonated with people but maybe didn't resonate with themselves. And it's kind of like it gets lost in how the work that they're creating or the work that's being greenlit is actually done. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. I'm Leslie. I'm talking with Zainab, who is the founder of Shortbox Comics Fair. It is an annual digital-only month-long event where comic creators and cartoonists from around the world exhibit a new comic for you to read. Check that out right now over at shortboxcomicsfair.com. I wanted to talk a bit about the submissions, I guess, because as mentioned before, like you get a lot of submissions, just under 2,000, and this year, when the submissions were announced, you mentioned that you were hoping to have like a longer period for submissions, like 4 months, so that things could be kind of more accessible to the creators. And it's really like a big open call, given that there's certain criteria that they have to meet. It has to be a new story, it has to be a new comic, and it has to be at least 16 pages. Would you be able to share a bit about the process of receiving pitches and then putting that together in the exhibition hall? And how do you approach creating the criteria for submissions for this open call that, like, anybody with internet access can, like, contribute to? And also talk about how accessibility factors into that.
So I'll start with the debunking, which is we don't take pitches. The way the process works is when applications are open, there's a very short application form. I think it asks for your name, an email, and then you can link to your portfolio, or any kind of website or Google Drive, you know, where your work is visible, whether that's samples of your illustration or comic work, it's up to you. And that's in terms of the application process, that's it. There's nothing else involved. Again, like, in terms of wanting to make it very accessible and not ask for, like, you know, all these things that have come across loads of forms. You know, you don't, some of them you lose a will to live when you're filling them in. I don't even know why all that information is necessary, like, I've done it before. So that was, so keeping the form short and, you know, very, just like your email, just samples of your work. And then the way it works is once the submission period has closed, I go through the submissions as they come in, because it would be very daunting to go through, sit down and be like, okay, let's go through these 2,000 submissions. So I go through them as they come in. But once a submission, once I've gone through them all, I shortlist as I go, and then I get in touch with everyone in terms of who's been accepted and who hasn't, and let those people, everybody know which way it's gone. And then in terms of the people that have been accepted, at that point, they receive information about how to make their comic. I'm not involved at all in the making of the comic, so they don't have to pitch their ideas to me whatsoever. It's very, very independent. Again, like, these are not comics that I'm publishing or Shortbox is publishing. These are, like, self-published works. Like, the fair's job is to platform them, but they're fully owned by the artists. You know, they retain the full rights and ownership, so they can make whatever kind of comic that they want. It's entirely up to them. So I don't see the comic until it's completed. I don't know what they're doing. It's up to them, you know what I mean? I do, of course, reserve the right to refuse any kind of comic if it's, like, just, you, I feel like it's important to have that in case there's anything horrible. but that's never, touch wood, that's never had to happen. But yeah, and then when the deadline day is due, they go away. Once they're accepted, they, you know, they receive various guidelines about, you know, formatting, all this kind of stuff. So they go away, they make the comic, they submit it on deadline day, and then I have kind of like 8 weeks to put a fair together. My favorite bit. In terms of accessibility, yeah, I mean, it was something that, again, like, you know, I'm well, I guess now I would be classed as middle class, but I grew up working class. I live in the north of England. A lot of it is very working class. I'm also, my parents are like first generation immigrants. I'm Muslim and Pakistani, so, like, from lots of crossover, and a woman, all these little marginalizations. So, like, accessibility in, like, multiple forms is something that's really important to me. So one of the, and I think with, again, like, it's great with, I feel like, with an online fair and that has, like, a potential global reach, there's no excuse not to include people. I just find it so weird. Like, it still happens where a fair, you know, you get the announcement, oh, here's our lineup and everybody will be white, or here's our lineup and this year is international and it's, like, three white people from Europe. That one always gets me when this is international and it's like a Swiss person and a Danish person and they're all white, and it's like, oh, so international. So I just, like, To me, I just like, even not like being, oh, you're being woke or you're being like, it's just like, it's so boring. Like, the, guess what? Brown people, black people can make comics and they're really good. like, women can make comics. So it's just like, I don't even find it like, it's not even something that I sort of feel embarrassed to say that, like, I set out to do, because I'm not sitting there thinking, who made this comic? Was it a brown person? Like, I'm just, it's, oh, this work is really interesting, and like, but at the same time, you do have to have like some degree of, the idea of equity in your mind. And so, like, somebody who is working class and, not from like a comfortable background is not going to have had the same opportunities as somebody who's like comfortable and middle class, for example. So, when you have more opportunities, you have more opportunities to grow, to be a better artist. So I do take those kind of factors into account. Like, yes, so, some of the work may not be exactly where they want it to be, but there's a reason for that. And it still has to fall within like what we discussed previously, like, it still has to have, I still have those same standards. But again, it's something that you have to keep in mind. People around the world, access is not the same, so that's really important to me. And I feel like, and there's so, another way in which you try to be accessible was also charging a fee for being part of the fair. So traditionally, for in-person fairs, you always have to pay a table fee, and these fees have sort of like have started becoming incredibly extortionate. Like, it can go to like $500, $600, for you to hire a table for 2 days. And then you have, for in-person fairs, of course, and you have the travel costs. You have to have like go find a place to stay, whether it's a hotel, Airbnb, whatever. So it can become like an incredibly expensive endeavor to simply, take your books and table at a convention. So the first few years I did charge an exhibiting fee, although it was a low one. I think it was 40, £45. And I'm happy to say that when in all of the fairs, everybody made the exhibiting fee back. But also I started thinking about whether that was really necessary. Because especially in terms of, because we do have a global reach, and in various foreign currencies, even £45 can sort of like translate to a lot of money for, if you're from like a, which against like the pound and the dollar, lots of countries, it's still very, very expensive when you convert the amount. So I feel like so this is the first year I'm trialing charging no exhibiting fee, but instead take a percentage of like the sales. So the way it works is hopefully like if the artist makes something, then I also make something. And if they don't make something, then obviously I haven't done my job right and I don't make anything either. And hopefully that's like a fair way of doing it. But yeah, and hopefully, like, I feel like in terms of accessibility, I'm not saying like I'm the standard bearer or anything, but I feel like, these small things, hopefully, they make a difference. Yeah, and I know like lots of people, like, COVID is still like an issue for many, chronically ill people, and immunocompromised people. And we all get quite a few messages saying that, like, I can't go out to conventions anymore, but I can visit this one, which is digital. So that's really nice. I'm glad like it fills that need for some people.
I think the first year when I checked out La Fair, I was just really delighted by like the, I don't want to use the term necessarily, but the diversity of voices that were featured. I don't know. Maybe it's a North America thing. But I find that in North America, when folks want to like check out comics and stuff, it is still like very much like based in like we're gonna publish, like only North American writers, essentially. And the most international thing that we're gonna get is like droves of like shonen manga, and that's kind of the extent of it. And so it was really exciting to see how folks from all over the world approached creating comics and the types of stories that they wanted to tell. And I mean, for me, I really have to be honest, like, I think some of the best comics that I've read have been purchases from the fair. Like,
that's so kind.
It's like, you can really see how the people who sell their work there, just how much craftsmanship and thoughtfulness that they put into their work, that sometimes you don't get to see the way that it's done in like maybe a more like a mainstream comics publisher, or like the particular techniques or the types of stories that that are going to be told. So yeah, if anything, listener, let that be a reason as to why you should check out Dropbox Comics Fair this year, which is happening right now, and it's happening until the end of the month in October 31st. Could you please remind me the exact time it's going to end?
Yeah, so October 31st, I think 8 p.m. UK time. I'm not sure what time that is in Canadian.
8 p.m. UK time. That's going to be noon on October 31st in Pacific Standard Time in Vancouver. So go check that out. And of course, I am Leslie. I'm the host of Typically Tuesdays on 90.1 FM, CJSF. And I'm talking with Zainab, who is the founder and main person, the person behind Dropbox Comics Fair. With regards to the fair, have there been struggles or issues platforming independent comics?
I guess the main challenge is marketing. Again, you know, something we touched on before, where you have to do everything on your own. I feel like this concept is great. Like, it's really successful. We also have the advantage of like it being something unique and you know, like, genuinely, there's nobody who does this. You know, there's nothing like this. So it's working, but it's really difficult because you don't have the resources. You're not able to hire people who have like marketing as the area. You know, like, for me, it's okay, right, what do I have available to me? I have like social media platforms, I have like a newsletter, and that's kind of it. That's my reach in terms of like trying to, you know, market the fair. And I think that's the area, if there was anything, like, that's a big challenge, because I feel very restricted on that front. You know, we print posters and flyers, send them out to shops, but it's just really these few things that we can do. Again, the royal we. So I feel like the big challenge is, you know, a lack of money resources, which is very sort of like general and like probably like the challenge that everybody has. But having said that, I'm still like incredibly grateful. I feel, more than anything, I'm super grateful, like, in terms of, we have a really strong readership. You know, like, people, you'll hear, I think people always deride audiences, and I'm like such a staunch believer in like the intelligence of audiences, because that's what I have experienced. You know, like, these, the comics that we make, like, a lot of them, you know, there's just so many different issues in there. You know, they're complex in different ways. You know, stylistically, you know, it may not always, to like the average person, it may not always be accessible. But, you know, it's never been an issue. That, I feel like that's the key to why the fair is successful, because of like the short books readership. You know, they've always sort of aligned with what I'm doing, and I feel very lucky to like have those people, which is effectively why we're able to do this. But the area I would really like to focus on is audience growth, because I think like the idea is working, the concept is working, the comics are great. It's just about like, every year I just want to try and reach more people, and be like, hey, look, this is a great idea, this is a great thing that's happening, do you know about it? So I think that that's really the sort of main challenge.
Yeah, I think that's super fair. Especially, I don't know, maybe this is just a me thing. I find that marketing independent stuff as like even on the internet is so difficult. 'Cause there used to be, I don't know, maybe this is a my experience thing, but there used to be this idea that well, on the internet, like anybody can do it. It's all DIY. You're free to do whatever you want, and you just have to find your audience and stuff like that. But I've found that, like, you know, the algorithm does not really work in anyone's favor who's not, I don't know, who's not like really, really backed up and who's not got the knowledge and expertise to know how to make it work in their favor. I find that's a really big problem that folks bump up against. Not to ask you to like pick favorites or anything or whatnot, but I was wondering, for this year at the festival, are there any comics that you'd strongly recommend that folks would check out? Gems that might go unintentionally under the radar, because a lot of the times will happen at these fairs is like, you know, I love like Hannah Chitani, for example, and I'm definitely going to check out her work. But then who else am I forgetting about, whose work I should be checking out?
Oh, this is always so difficult, because I genuinely there are so many, but I'll try and recommend a few sort of like a good mix. So the first one is, I think it's like it's over 100 pages. We've got some incredibly long comics this year. It's called Allodynia. It's by Violet Kitchen, who's like a fantastic up-and-coming cartoonist. And the comic is about two people in a relationship, and one of them is chronically ill, and the tensions that come from like their partner feeling like the guilt around, you know, the pain that their partner goes through and not really being able to do that, and then how that affects both their behaviors and the impact it has on the relationship. And it's like an incredible comic. I really recommend that one. And then there's a comic by this amazing French artist called El Adascovy, and it's called Hibernation Guide for Rabbits and Hares. And it has some of the most charming and delightful art that you will ever see. But it's also, you know, those kind of stories that are both incredibly warm but also moving. It's about these small animals, and they have like a hotel where they hibernate each year. So they're preparing to sort of like, you know, go into hibernation. So everybody's getting around, bringing their packages, you know, getting into their rooms. And the reason that they hibernate, some of these animals traditionally they don't hibernate, but because the world outside is changing, they've decided that, you know, they have to sort of adapt to that world. So there's also tensions between people, the animals who don't think it's necessary to hibernate, and that the others are stupid. There's a bit of social commentary in there as well. But it's the most beautiful thing that you'll both see and read. A non-fiction recommendation. There's if you can take it, because it's sort of heartbreaking, by Joyce Ng, is a comic called Felicity, and it made me cry. I think it's an experiment in the 1960s, if I remember correctly. And it was an isolation experiment that they did with the Greyland geese. And this particular goose was called Felicity, so they isolated her essentially from birth, and it's just like incredibly heartbreaking. And I think the great thing about Joyce is, like, if that was me making that comic, I'd be so judgmental. I'd be like, these people are horrible, how dare they? But she just presents the case in a, you know, like she just sort of tells you the facts about what happened, and then, but she does it in such a way that, you know, it's up to you to like make your mind up about, you know, how you feel about it. But there's sort of like questions in there about like the extent of cruelty, you know, we do in the name of like science, or like, oh, this is going to save people, so like, is that okay to like kill hundreds of innocent animals in the hope of like, oh, we might cure a person, or we might not even. often not even cure a person, or you just might learn something about how a geese responds to being taken away from its mother. So yeah, I really recommend that one, but again, like, only if you're feeling up to it. I'll do one more, which is The Last Crane. It's by an artist from Thailand called Narsid, and it's sort of like a fantasy epic. So in the beginning, it's set in an era where gods walk the earth, and you know, there's like gods and prophets, and they interact with each other and they live with each other, and then a period comes where the gods leave the earth, but one of the prophets, the god was his lover, so when the god leaves, he's incredibly distraught, and then he goes after, like, he's sort of like mourning like this loss for like 10 years, and then he decides to go on a journey to try and find the god again. And it's just, it's so stunning, like the layouts, the colors, just visually probably one of like the most beautiful comics that you'll see. I could go on, but I'd probably leave it at 4 for you. But if anybody ever needs any recommendations, like, it's my favorite thing to do. So you can always just email me, or like, obviously on the Fair socials as well. But yeah, I just really recommend, like, even if you don't feel like you want to buy anything, I feel, of course I'm biased, but I feel like it's worth visiting and just having a look at, like, the scope of, you know, like, what comics can be, even if you're just, like, curious, and, like, see all the different visual styles, you know, the different approaches, different narratives. I feel like it's worth a look.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you for the recommendations, and also, you know, capping it at 4, I feel like, is pretty reasonable, because it gives folks more chances to check out all the other stuff that might go not as noticed. This has been really awesome. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to talk to me. I know we're a little bit past your bedtime now, so I'm gonna let you go. Again, for the curious listener, this has been my conversation with Zainab, who is the founder of Shortbox Comics Fair. It's a month-long annual digital comics fair online where more than 100 new independently published comics are exhibited and sold. I really strongly recommend that you check it out. For me, it's really been one of the things that I look forward to every year as a comics reader, because I know I'm always going to be able to find really interesting stuff in there, and a lot of it is just really wondrous. The craftsmanship, the thoughtfulness that goes into creating the work is really, really cool, and it's all kind of helpfully arm's length facilitated by Zainab, who has really good taste. Where can people find out more about the fair beyond just Googling?
Me, people don't Google anymore. So the website is the main place, shortboxcomicsfair.com. And then we are also on various social media, Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr, Blue Sky, under SB Comics Fair. And those are really the places. And of course, but the website is the main one, and it's got all the information and also the email.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This is Bird Noir. I'm Michael Stein. Private Eye. Of all my sorry tales, the sorriest one is my nemesis bird. That's what us birders call a species that just keeps giving you the slip. Well, my nemesis bird is the painted bunting. A real gem of a bird. The males have blue heads, green wings, and red breasts. And the females are yellow-green. These birds love open spaces, shrubby clearings, and overgrown farm fields. I don't get out of the city much, what with my PI work. But whenever I hear about a painted bunting around, I grab my binoculars and my fedora and rush out the door.